Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Finals Countdown series, which is brought to you by MedTalks. In this series, we're providing short, succinct, and super useful revision talks across all specialties for all of your upcoming exams and beyond. We hope you've been enjoying the series so far. Please remember to give us some feedback. Let us know your thoughts on the series. You can message us on Instagram, medtalks.uk, or you can email us at hellomedtalks@gmail.com. And please don't forget to leave a like and a comment on the Apple Podcast platform if you're using that to listen to these episodes. In today's talk, we're in the gastroenterology section, and I'll be covering a particular cancer called cholangiocarcinoma. So before we get into this episode, I'd like to just take a moment to talk about the sponsors, and they are Wesleyan. Now, Wesleyan is a company that was set up way back in 1841, and they provide tailored financial advice and products to multiple professional groups, including doctors, dentists, and teachers. I'd like to just touch on Wesleyan's latest project called The Next Step. The Next Step is born from the Wesleyan tradition of giving back. Built in collaboration with final year students, The Next Step brings together some of the brightest sparks in medicine for live events, workshops, exam resources, contents, and podcasts to make the step into F1 a little easier. They address subject matter you didn't know that you needed to know. So go on over and follow them on Instagram by searching at The Wes Next Step, or Facebook by searching The Next Step -Wesleyan, or visit their website, which is thenextstep.wesleyan.co.uk. Right then, let's get back to the episode. What are you going to learn in this talk? So firstly, I'll go through what cholangiocarcinoma is and how it occurs. I'll discuss what the clinical features are and how it's diagnosed. Then we'll move on to how we can treat cholangiocarcinoma, and finally talk about the complications and the prognosis. Right, so cholangiocarcinoma is essentially a cancer which arises within any part of the biliary tree, and that stretches from the small intrahepatic ducts to the ampulla of Vater at the distal end of the bile duct. So the ampulla of Vater is a small opening that enters into the first portion of the small intestine called the duodenum. And it's a spot where the pancreatic and bile ducts release their secretions into the intestines to aid with digestion. Now, more than 90% of cholangiocarcinomas are ductal adenocarcinomas, and the rest of them are squamous cell. And usually they occur at near the bifurcation of the right and left hepatic ducts. And what I would suggest at this point is to just revisit the anatomy of the biliary tree. In terms of statistics, well, about 1 to 2 per 100,000 population within the UK and USA will develop cholangiocarcinoma. Typically, it's after 60 years of age. And there is a higher incidence in the Southeast Asian countries, and this is due to a chronic endemic parasitic infection with liver flukes. Now, liver flukes are parasitic worms, and usually humans get infected with these liver flukes after eating contaminated raw or undercooked freshwater fish or watercress. In terms of other risk factors, well, it's well known that chronic ulcerative colitis can lead to primary sclerosing cholangitis, and we've got an episode on that, so go and check that one out. That can then is heavily associated with cholangiocarcinoma. And the lifetime risk of developing this cancer with primary sclerosing cholangitis is 10 to 20%. As I previously mentioned, another risk factor is infection with liver flukes. Also, there's industrial chemical exposure is associated, so aircraft, rubber, and wood finishing industries, congenital abnormalities of bile ducts, and then other things include HIV, hepatitis C, cirrhosis, and diabetes. In terms of the clinical features, jaundice is often an early feature, and also hepatomegaly, so an enlarged liver. Patients may experience right upper quadrant abdominal pain and also may experience weight loss, but this can be variable. In terms of more general features, patients may experience pale stools, dark urine, anorexia, and general malaise. Now, why do we get pale stools and dark urine, I hear you all ask? Well, that's a great question. These are two signs of cholestasis. Now, cholestasis is defined as the stagnation or a marked reduction in bile secretion and flow. And it's due to a either a functional impairment of the hepatocytes in the secretion of bile, and or an obstruction at any level of the excretory pathway of bile, from the level of the hepatic parenchymal cells to the ampulla of Vata in the duodenum. So, cholestasis, now there are several clinically important sequelae which contribute to the clinical presentation. So there's retention of conjugated bilirubin and its regurgitation into the serum. There's increased serum concentration of unconjugated bilirubin and there's increased bile salts. And generally, conditions that give rise to cholestasis broadly fall into two categories. So if there's a mechanical blockage in the duct system, so obstructive or extrahepatic cholestasis, or there's disturbances in bile formation, so that's hepatocellular or intrahepatic cholestasis. Now, with a cancer like cholangiocarcinoma, this would be a obstructive cholestasis that leads to the pale stools and dark urine. So we get pale stools because no bilirubin reaches the gastrointestinal tract and because of the obstruction, and there's dark urine because there is reflux of conjugated bilirubin into the blood. This then gets excreted into the urine and it darkens the urine. And both of these are strong features of cholestasis. Other clinical features that patients with cholangiocarcinoma may experience are pruritus or itching, and again this is due to the jaundice and excessive bilirubin buildup. And they may have a palpable bladder, and this can occur with tumours distal to the cystic duct. They may have a palpable gallbladder, which can occur with tumours distal to the cystic duct. Now, a painless palpable gallbladder is called the Courvoisier's sign. And the Courvoisier's sign states that in a patient who has painless jaundice and an enlarged gallbladder or right upper quadrant mass, the cause is unlikely to be gallstones and therefore presumes the cause to be an obstructing pancreatic or biliary neoplasm until proven otherwise. So those are the clinical features. Now let's move on to how we are going to diagnose a patient with cholangiocarcinoma. In terms of blood tests, well, there'll be a cholestatic picture in the blood test, so a raised conjugated bilirubin, a raised alkaline phosphatase, but minimally affected ALT and AST, as there is no real hepatocytic damage as such. Now, clotting may be prolonged, so the prothrombin time and the INR. And importantly, we look at tumour markers. So specifically for cholangiocarcinoma, the CA19-9, so the carcinoembryonic antigen, CEA tumour marker, is used for cholangiocarcinoma. The reason that the clotting screen is affected is any prolonged liver disease, whether that's biliary obstruction or parenchymal liver disease, will lead to abnormal clotting. Hey guys, just a quick one before we continue with this episode. I wanted to talk to you about an amazing online educational platform called Brilliant. Brilliant is an online learning platform with some incredible and unique content targeted for STEM education, and that's science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. The combination of high quality courses, creative learning design, and beginner friendliness makes it very appealing for all students. The user interface is very modern and they offer a 7-day free trial for you to test it out. Now, their catalogue currently features more than 60 courses on subjects as varied as neural networks, solar energy, and cryptocurrency. All the lessons taught come with interactive exercises, quizzes, and daily challenges, all to keep the students of Brilliant as engaged with the materials as possible. To learn more about Brilliant, simply click the link in the episode bio and revolutionize your way of learning. Now, following the blood tests, the next step in the diagnosis of cholangiocarcinoma would be through imaging. The first line imaging would be an ultrasound scan or a CT scan, but the most diagnostic scan would be an MRI scan with contrast. This is the best imaging method for diagnosing cholangiocarcinoma. Also, you can do MRI cholangiography or endoscopic retrograde cholangiopancreatography or ERCP. This can show the site of obstruction, and also ERCP may be used to obtain samples for biopsy. And the diagnosis should be made on the basis of radiological investigations and a pathological assessment from a biopsy or a fine needle aspiration. In terms of differential diagnoses, it's always important to consider these. So what else could it be? Well, patients with right upper quadrant pain, you must always think about gallstones, acute cholecystitis, ascending cholangitis, Also, with the other features like jaundice and malaise, then you need to consider primary biliary cirrhosis or primary biliary cholangitis, primary sclerosing cholangitis. And to rule these out, you might want to do the autoantibody, so the anti-mitochondrial antibody, the anti-smooth muscle antibody, and the anti-nuclear antibody. Furthermore, acute hepatitis, so a viral hepatitis panel may be done, and also a pancreatic tumour. And the way the imaging would be the best way to make sure there's no pancreatic tumour. In terms of the staging, well, this consists of a complete history and physical examination, blood tests, imaging of the abdomen by ultrasound and CT scan or MRI, and then the ERCP. And then moving on to the management, the best option would be surgery, but complete surgical resection is the only intervention to offer a cure, but less than a third, so less than 33% are actually resectable at diagnosis. Then also you've got the chemotherapy, which could be adjuvant chemotherapy after surgery. And in terms of non-surgical treatment, there are stents that can be inserted through ERCP to stent the bile duct to relieve symptoms, but these stents are often prone to occlusion and may need regular replacement. And then other non-surgical treatments include chemotherapy and radiotherapy. In terms of complications, there is a great risk of biliary tract sepsis, and this may cause a deterioration which will require antibiotic therapy. And also secondary biliary cirrhosis occurs in 10 to 20% of patients. And in terms of prognosis, it can have a progressive deterioration with an average survival of 12 to 18 months from diagnosis. And the overall survival rates are low because many patients present with unresectable or even metastatic disease. And those patients who do undergo aggressive surgery, the five-year survival rates are about 10 to 40%. Okay, guys, that brings me to the end of this talk where we've covered cholangiocarcinoma. So as promised at the beginning, we've gone through what cholangiocarcinoma is and how it occurs, what some of the risk factors are. We've discussed the clinical features and how we can diagnose it. And then we've gone on to talk about the management, including surgery, non-surgical options. And at the end, we've briefly touched on the complications and also the prognosis. Again, I just want to say thank you so much to everyone for listening. Thank you for all of your support. Please remember to reach out to us. You can message us on Instagram, medtalks.uk, or email us. Our email address, as I mentioned at the beginning, is hellomedtalks@gmail.com. Get in touch, give us your feedback, ask us any questions about these episodes you'd like to, and we'd love to respond to your queries. Remember to share them with your friends, your peers, anyone else who may find them useful for exams or just general knowledge for the future as doctors. And we wish you all the best with your revision and for your upcoming exams. We want you to stay tuned because we've got plenty more episodes coming up and lots of exciting new series as well, so you'll be hearing all about those shortly. But have a great day. Thank you for listening, and we will speak